Recording in progress.
Alluded to. The minister and the DM also, together even with the CEOs of the entities, because we not only do it at a departmental level, entities are also assisting the department, are a delivery vehicle for the mandate of the department. So they also are part of this discussion. And on the 5th, there was that session and a workshop that was held after the conclusion of the fourth quarter. And as instructed, we had a special 3D. The 3D is constituting of myself as the chairperson with all DDGs, where we then look into the underperforming branches, and also those branches were tasked to then present improvement plans, which then they had formalized. And I'm going to go into the detail. We
recording in progress.
Impact service delivery on the ground and not necessarily back office deliverables, which will not be realized and be benefit directly the citizens of the country. In coming up with the APP for 2023. It's still an ongoing process. So from 149, we have come down to less than 100. It's about 95, 98 that we are working on. And in addition to that, I think I have indicated that we have developed the
recording in progress.
What we have been doing. So that is what we are still working with National Treasury on. But we have implemented in-house where we employ them, not of our employees, but employ them in the department in a different category as contract workers, and then utilize, we have a contract with one of the commercial banks, and so that then when you pay, you just pay those EPWP workers directly through an instrument similar to your e-wallet and so on and so forth. It's still a pilot while we are waiting for National Treasury to assist us. And we believe that we really need to look at other measures given that environmental programs are quite critical for employment on the ground. Can we go to the next slide, Chair? I think here is different programs, and I would want to highlight what we have done. And I think you've indicated that I must take this as read, and there's quite a sizable. Biodiversity and Conservation Branch is one of the program where we have had to work together with them, and myself and the DDG and the team. And what we have focused on here is areas where the branch either partially achieved or were off target in the previous financial year. So all these branches that I'm going to be highlighting is the measures that we've put in place in an improvement plan that we've agreed upon with the branches, and we are monitoring that on an ongoing basis with the branches. The first year, I think it's around the number of national parks declared. And here, in terms of the root cause, of the challenge, why there was underperformance. The declaration process was dependent on concluding negotiations with landowners. And what we then have put in place is that there must be focus on stewardship sites and also entering into agreements with landowners and making sure that we negotiate with these landowners ahead of time. I must report that those negotiations with landowners have been initiated in the first quarter, but also look at some legislative gap analysis, which then will enable us to run a quicker declaration process. So how best, while aligning to legislation, can we ensure that we fast-track the processes? The second part is around the MAT system. And the MAT system, that's where we are able to assess the state of management of protected areas. And there we work very closely also with management authorities. I think the main challenge we had with all management authorities across the country was the lack of appropriate cooperation in terms of implementing internal quality control. So you would receive data, but the data would not be as reliable. And you will find that it is not, has not been signed by appropriate officials. So we've had a session with all management authorities. We've developed improvement plans that then focuses on what needs to be implemented as an intervention. Also, we have then emphasized that it must be signed by the required senior management. So what we would get before is data, which is just sent through to us without a signature of an accounting officer or at least a senior manager within a management authority that attests that the information is verified. And that actually proved to be a challenge. And we have worked on that. On the HLP recommendation, I think here it was mainly issues of the policy position, which had to be held in abeyance. And I think when we were reporting in the previous quarters, we are pursuing the broader policy, the broader legislative white paper, which then the policy development will have to take a cue from the white paper. And that is currently under consultation, which has been approved by Cabinet and is under consultation. And we have a very clear roadmap and timeframe around that process. On the biodiversity management plans for the various species, we're making headways, especially around the rhino BMPs. And the issue here also is that these had been put in abeyance because we then need to have the broader policy on conservation and sustainable use. So in as much as we've put it in abeyance while the white paper is being consulted on, but there is work that is currently ongoing on the ground, like stock taking implementation in terms of all rhino initiatives, which already has been completed. And then we have to look into having a draft BMP stakeholder consultation in the third quarter, because we will have to go through the process of the white paper first before we can finalize this process. The next slide is still on BNC. Around the biodiversity economy initiative, where one of the key was around is on game donation, and that was delayed mainly because there was an MOU that had to be signed with the Department of Defense, because Defense wanted to work closely with us. It's part of the partners that work closely with us in terms of game donation, but also to ensure that we have a very clear, transparent process and a criteria in terms of how then do you do these donations, and are you then achieving the intended objective of empowering and also dealing with issues of transformation as you implement some of these initiatives. So there, the MOU has been finalized. And the plan was completed in the first quarter. We are planning to then commence on donation in the process of the current quarter or second quarter. The rhino integrated management strategy intervention, There, it was around the development of terms of reference. The department or the branch BMC, there were delays in developing the terms of reference. And then those terms of reference then are now ready, which then will enable. We are working closely with SANBI, and SANBI is the one that is going to then be implementing this strategy on our behalf. Also, there is ongoing data collection and monitoring of rhino population through our management authorities, in as far as input data into the strategy. So what we are highlighting here, then, as I've already alluded, is performance management in the branch. The DDG has a very clear instruction in terms of how then she needs to be ensuring that these corrective measures are indeed achieved, and indeed the rest of management are working towards us achieving these areas. On the EP slide, Honorable Chair, we have a very tight implementation plan with EP. I had already alluded to around the EPWP initiatives. But the first thing is around project management capacity within the branch, and also, which is as a result of before there were payments that were made in advance to various provision of services or service providers or agencies that were actually employing your public employment or implementing public employment on the ground. However, we had had to change that. The second part, as I alluded, is that there were delays by some service provider to provide required information. And here it's both training the service provider. Some of these service provider who are there in communities, rural communities, closer to where the project should be, and they do not have the required information. I mean, when you look at a tendering process that wants you to have financial statements or at least a record of bookkeeping that you've had in the past 3 years and so on, they've really grappled around that, and it required them to be trained in order for them then to be able to then tender for those processes. There's also an issue in this branch in as far as project management or around proactiveness in planning ahead of time. So the tendency was that you would then only conclude a plan when you're supposed to be implementing. And I think this is now a change in project cycle of saying you need to initiate a project. If you're going to implement it 2 years down the line, initiate it early, put in place plans and ensure that you go on tender. And then by the time it's due for implementation, you can then hit the ground running. And those are the improvement plans that we have highlighted for that part. Insufficient data management. Here it's mainly about capturing. And this is a matter that we've also, Honorable Chair, we've taken up with National Treasury and DPWI. We have various systems of managing EPWP, and we have to capture that information at a departmental level, but then also capture it in an EPWP system, which then tends to cause delay. And we have requested that there be integrated systems. When you capture, you know, your job creation, whatever targets that you have for your public employment, you must do it once, and the next level must be able to extract the information and collect it from there. Currently, there is a number of layers which then delays in the actual information being captured at the DPWI's system. So that's one of the critical parts that we have requested, that we need to relook at this. But also there is a new system that DPWI has implemented, and we had to have our own officials being trained on the system and ensure that they are then conversant with the requirements of reporting, because whatever we report on a quarterly basis, is it must be verified not only at our level, but also by the Department of Public Works, because then they collate the whole information across all departments to then give a clear picture of how much job opportunities are created through EPWP. So we're working with Department of Public Works and Infrastructure in as far as that is concerned. The last one is a major tender that was cancelled. And I know that members would have raised questions around this tender. This is, the number is E1590, but it's a tender basically for public employment. And what the challenge that was there in as far as this is that this tender was non-responsive. So when it was advertised, and we got quite a number of responses nationally, but it was very difficult when evaluating those to then link them to what then needs to be done on the ground at a regional level, community level. And I think here, Chair, we really, I think, should have done the issues of the specs much better, such that then the specs are focusing at community, regional level, so that you then get a provider within a locality that will create employment within a locality. You do not get a national provider that then goes into a different locality, which then will cause a lot of unsettle or unhappiness on the ground. So I think the way the structuring was not appropriate, such that when then the responses came through, it really required that we need to revisit the structure and be in a position to employ locally people who are within a locality of where the work must be done. So that was the other challenge. So this is EP, and EP is on a weekly basis. And I've indicated EP, I would term it when I discuss with the DDG there. It's one of our programs in the ICU. The others may be in high care, but this one is the one that really keeps us awake at night, and we really need to get it right moving forward. The next is forestry. Forestry is also one of those, and you would have noted both in as far as the expenditure and the performance. So that's the other one, which I also, forestry and EP are the ones that are very close to my monitoring on a continuous basis in as far as the poor performing. The others, yes, I am working very closely with them, but on a monthly basis, these I meet on every 2 weeks. So on forestry, there was an underperformance on the number of plantation handed over to communities. We did not meet that target. And mainly, I think the root cause was around the community conflicts that were not necessarily anticipated, but it also talks to our engagement, our communication strategy, and to what extent do we involve, if it is the traditional leaders and so on. We need to have a very clear strategy before we actually go into finalization of these agreements to engage with the communities on an ongoing basis. And in certain instances, some of these conflicts are beyond us, but I think we also need to do our level best to try and ensure that we work with the traditional and tribal councils on the ground to deal with these matters. And those are the improvement plans that we have. And you would have seen that we've managed to get a breakthrough where the Deputy Minister has done one of the handovers in the Eastern Cape. And also we had then had to do the transfer of those biological assets that are there in terms of PFMA. The nurseries and the refurbishment of nursery, it is both the nurseries and also the planting of the trees. We have a clear commitment here around the 10 million trees. And these are two areas that have really performed poorly in the branch. I have worked closely with the DDG on the improvement plan around this. And this is one of the areas that have actually has constituted a formal process of performance managing the DDG at this level and also even the EP at the EP one, so that we are recording and looking into ways in which then these interventions that are here must yield results, failing which then would then need to go to the next step in as far as these are concerned. The next slide talks to the licenses, where there's license application that is done. And those license applications require that you then need to do verification and consult if it is a leased area. You need then to be consulting with that people who are leasing the area in order to then make a determination of the license that is being applied for. And here basically we just need to ensure that we improve planning and communication with clients, as opposed to giving them short notice. You receive a license, you must properly plan to say who are the clients that are actually impacted upon, and you proactively then communicate with them in advance, so that when you start engaging with them, then you are able to go through all the requirements, which will enable us to then process that application, which we are actually considering, and we are able to then consider in totality. In the next slide, it talks to fisheries. Fisheries is also one of the areas, and I think the various DDGs, when then they present, will be in a position to go into detail. The poor performing area, the policies. Policies approved was not only just about FREP policies, but also beyond FREP. We are supposed to also deal with issues of FREP. All FREP policies. So basically here we prioritized. I'm sorry, all fisheries policies. We prioritized the FREP policies, and in this FREP that we have just concluded, and of course we are currently going through the appeals. The critical aspect is that in the past there was never any economic impact assessment done. Now, for a policy to be considered and a policy to be approved, you must have done an economic, the implication of that policy on the ground, socio-economic impact, what is it? And the presidency is quite clear around that requirement. And that was an added work that the branch had to do, which they never used to do before. And as a result, then the other policies could not be done, and they are now being prioritized in the current financial year. On the revenue model and collection target, there I think the department did take a decision, and possibly given that this is an area where we look at increasing or working on the rate at which levies and fees should be increased across the industry and so on, we as a department then decided to defer this, given that a number of participant in the industry, be it your small scale and all other participants, had been impacted negatively by COVID, but also the economic situation. We then postponed that, and we then felt that for that year, it was really not going to be fair for us to introduce an increase in levies and fares. And we are only looking at that in the current year. Operation Pakisa, this is quite critical. This is quite critical in terms of the industry, where projects are received from industry, but it's demand driven. We only receive two out of three. And we had a target of three based on history, but I think the DDG will explain in detail that they possibly, we need to begin to work very closely with industry and provide advisory services to some of these fishery farmers so that they begin to appreciate the opportunities that are there for them to be able then to put forward and register projects. And it's something that we would need to deal with. And in the past 2 years, there was then the decline in other markets like your Asian markets. And maybe it was not feasible to then have a project commencing at that point in time. But also as a department, we need to work very closely with these cooperatives, assist them, and advise them in terms of them coming up with some of these aquaculture projects. The shark national plan of action on the sharks. It's mainly, I think, even the second. This one is linked to the team within fisheries, which was focusing mainly on trying to ensure that we run a process of FREP, which the department did and concluded, and now going through appeals. The last one is on the Western Cape, rights allocation for cooperatives. We couldn't move until such time that because the matter was dependent on a court decision, and we are then highlighting that tomorrow the matter is going to be held in court in relation to this, and we're hoping that we can be in a position to get a favorable judgment which will enable us to progress swiftly, because we would want to deal with these matters and conclude them in the current financial year. The livelihood strategy also here, I think there were issues of non-compliance. It was an issue of because we were supposed to do and pilot it in two coastal communities. The tender was then non-responsive and non-compliant, and we then had to cancel that tender. Minister, with your permission, I think these covers the branches, but I think the next part is mainly focusing on the issues that we as a department are grappling with in as far as our audit is concerned. And I would really request if the CFO can be in a position to just briefly go through the areas where we have worked on, but what else still remains for the department, given the sizable historic issues that we have had to deal with in the department, but also an element of SPM. And I know that the Honorable Chair and the members were really not happy with us as a department, where we highlighted the challenge of supply chain. We have done a concerted effort to improve on capacity for supply chain and also look into other measures to ensure that the supply chain is pushed at a much faster rate. I do have every 2 weeks, 8 o'clock meetings with the CFO, the supply chain team, looking at the progress on how do we unlock some of those challenges that we have in as far as supply chain is concerned. And we would want to believe that with implementation of those areas which are highlighted in the presentation, Chair, there will be improvement in as far as the issues around supply chain is concerned. With your permission, Chairperson, I just would like the CFO just to take us through some of the areas where, especially on the issues of qualification, what exactly are the issues that we have identified as root causes and what is it that we are doing. Thank you very much, Chair. And then we will hand over to DDGs to then talk to their yellows and reds. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. In that order, please. CFO.
Good morning. Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and the colleagues. I will talk to the areas on the Office of the CFO which affected. Our main target was to ensure that we get an unqualified audit opinion. In the 2020-2021 financial year, we received our audit report on the 21st of October 2022, which resulted us in having only about 3 months to ensure that we implement the audit action plan that the department developed. The areas that we were qualified on in the previous financial year were 4 areas. Irregular expenditure, which affected the accuracy and completeness of the schedule that we submitted in our financial statements, and also the capital commitments, whereby AG highlighted that whatever that we disclosed in our financial statements was not adequately disclosed. There were material amendments, and also they could not, which resulted in AG not relying on the schedule that we submitted. And also we were qualified for the first time on the triple P, whereby AG highlighted that the manner in which we disclosed was not in line with the modified cash standards. And also the capital works in progress, whereby we did not split what should have been capitalized in our books versus what should have been treated as goods and services. So those were the 4 areas that we were qualified on in the 2020-21 financial year. What we did as a department on a weekly basis, we had to ensure that we follow up on the status of the audit action plan with the entire team of the Office of the CFO and also the DDGs that were directly involved in the information that was required for the financial statements. So that resulted in us clearing on irregular expenditure for this financial year. As much as you have highlighted, Honorable Chairperson, that the audit reports and the results have not been formally announced by the AG, but I can safely say that on our side for this year, that is the 2021-22, we managed to ensure that we rectify and clear the accuracy part of the irregular expenditure schedule, and we were left with the completeness matter, whereby the AG raised issues that emanated in 2016-2017 financial year, which we did not include in our schedule. So as a result, we are still left with that part. We have already started developing the audit action plan for the 2022-23 financial year, which will also assist in trying to resolve the issues that have been addressed or that have been raised by the AG.
Chairperson, can I suggest Ms. Just switches her camera because we can't hear her?
That's my issue as well. Ms. Just, can you then switch off your camera? We can hear you. Ms. Just, we can hear you. Ms. Josh?
I'm trying to call it. Yes. Please switch off your camera. Thank you.
repeat what you were saying for the past 1.5 minutes.
Apologies, honorable members and minister. Am I audible now?
Yes.
Okay.
What you have said over the past 2 minutes, you'll have to repeat it. We couldn't hear you at all.
Apologies for that. Should I start with what we have cleared on irregular expenditure, Chairperson?
Yes.
Okay. On irregular expenditure, Honorable Chairperson and members, in the previous financial year, we were qualified on the accuracy and completeness of the schedule that we submitted. However, what we did, we assessed our entire population, and as a result, in the 2022 financial year, we did not have issues on the accuracy of what we reported on. We were only left with the completeness matter on irregular expenditure, whereby the AG indicated that there was a contract that we had entered into on the 2016-2017 financial year, which we did not clean or which we did not disclose in our register. And as a result, that amount was material. And that resulted in us being started and developed the audit action plan. We will be reviewing it with the team as we just received the audit report now in so that we have ample time to ensure that we implement the corrective measures and the root causes that have been identified. At least in this financial year, the AG managed to finish the audit on time, unlike in the past, whereby we could not even have enough time to implement the audit action plan. So that will assist us in ensuring that we address all the root causes and ensure that we are ready for the next financial year. And then the second part that we were qualified on in the last financial year was on capital commitments. What we did with the team, we had to look at our entire population of all the contracts that we have in the department and ensure that we adequately did our financials. And as a result, the second part, we did not have any issues on the 2021-22 audit. And we managed to clear this qualification item. Then the triple P qualification item as well, that was raised by the AG in the previous financial year, we had intensive discussions with the Office of the Accountant General at National Treasury, also included the triple P unit under the GTEC from National Treasury, and also the private party, that is the party to the triple P, to the triple P of our building. And we tried to analyze and look at the root cause of what made the AG to indicate that we have not adequately disclosed this area. We looked at the manner in which we have reported this item in the financial statements. And as a result, we also managed to clear the qualification item in the 2021-22 audit. And then on the capital work in progress, last year, AG indicated that we have overstated what we reported because we capitalized everything that we had paid towards the contract. And as a result, it seemed and appeared that we have overstated what we regard as our infrastructure projects that we are reporting on. Because the matter is a bit complex, we don't have any supporting documents that will split what should have been capitalized in the books versus what should have been reported as operational items. We also involved the National Treasury in trying to find ways on how we can fair value those projects and its projects across the country. As a result, we had to look for an independent service provider that will assist us with those valuations. We found out that there is an entity which is called the Office of the Valuator General. I think it's under the Department of Agriculture, which we engage in ensuring that they assist us with the fair value of those projects on the ground so that we can account for those properly in our books. However, the process of ensuring that we get that service provider on board took longer than anticipated. At the time when we had to contract with the OVG, we realized that they are non tax compliant, and as a result, should we have gone ahead and contracted with them, that would have resulted in irregular expenditure. So the area we had anticipated that it will be finalized during the audit process. However, right now the service provider is on the ground and we are monitoring the progress on a regular basis. Even the DG indicated that she needs to be updated on a weekly basis on the status of what is happening in this area so that we ensure that we clear the matter for the next financial year. It is something that we are monitoring on a regular basis and we are hoping that by the time we finalize even the third quarter interim financial statements, this area would have been resolved. So in the 2021-22 financial year, the areas that we were left with, which resulted in the qualified audit opinion, was the irregular expenditure, the completeness part, and also the accuracy of the capital work in progress that could not be resolved before the end of the financial year. However, the service providers are currently on the ground in ensuring that we revalue those projects, and also we ensure that we account for them properly in our books. Then on the next slide, in the 2021-22 financial year, we ended the year with the expenditure of about 82%. This is mainly due to the fact that in the past, I think the DG has alluded to this part. In the past, we used to transfer money to the service providers to do mainly the EPWP projects, and that was found to be non-compliant. And I think mainly it's the one that resulted in the irregular expenditure that we are seeing ourselves carrying a huge balance on. So we had to put controls in place that normal SCM processes are being followed so that we are compliant in our processes and also we align ourselves to the regulations. So all those areas resulted in delays in ensuring that the projects are being implemented and therefore the payments are being effected. However, what we have done now, we have conducted sessions with all the branches in a form of a SCM workshop from the chief director level upwards, and also one-on-one trainings where we will group branches with the SCM practitioners so that we get to instill the culture of the compliance matters in line with the regulations so that we fast track and move on the procurement part of the department. So that resulted in the delays in us realizing the expenditure that we had intended to do in the 2021-22 financial year. However, with the interventions that we have put on the table, we are seeing progress. I think there was a slide that the DG presented earlier on whereby we managed to even reach the quarter one target of 23% in quarter one as opposed to what we achieved in the previous financial years. Also, we had challenges with the payment of our marine protected areas, whereby National Treasury indicated that we need to go out to the market as much as it's regulated protected areas. However, to be seen as if we are transparent, our laws in terms of National Treasury are requiring us to ensure that we go out on the market. We are engagements with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to address the issues because the department is unique. As much as we have to comply, but at the same time, we can't cripple the department due to the processes and policies that have been created to do, as a blanket approach, for a lack of a better word. So they have, we are working with them and we're hoping that it will yield results because the approval that we got for this year was to complete the ones that we still are contracted with. However, the new ones, those are the ones that they could not approve, and that resulted in us that had an impact in the expenditure for the department, which resulted in about 82% is at the end of quarter one of the financial year. However, with the monitor and the frequent monitoring of the expenditure, we have seen some improvements in this current financial year whereby we have achieved our target. Then on the next slide, in our APP for 2021-22 financial year, we have committed that we are striving, in order to strive to improve the transformation, we had targeted that we will spend 90% of our budget to BBBE compliant companies. And that resulted in us not achieving this target because we did not set it in line with the baseline of the department, in line with the track record, because most of our expenditure is mainly on the specialized non-BBBE compliant. However, in the 2022-23 APP, we had to go back and do an introspective assessment and look at the baseline and all the relevant factors that we needed to consider for this target to be achieved. So that is the area that we fell short on, because we had hoped that we will achieve about 90%. However, we could not. That's why we ended up looking at revising the target that we had set in the 2022-23 financial year. Also, with the issues that we have on the triple PFA, whereby we also indicated that 75% of our spending will go to Black and women-owned companies. However, with the contestation on the preferential procurement regulations, so we had to relook. That was the justification for us in looking at the target for the 2022-23 financial year. Also, I think Honorable Chairperson and the members, you may recall that towards around February in 2022, National Treasury issued the advisory note in line with the triple PSA, whereby we had a delay in awarding tenders and also with the procurement side. That also had a ripple effect on the expenditure, but it's something that we had to relook as the department, to look at our policies and ensure that we are not found wanting when it comes to those areas, which I think has also assisted us with in the manner in which we are looking at how we have performed in quarter one for this financial year. On the next slide, I think the DG highlighted the issues of the SCM. They mainly emanate from the manner in which we use to procure. If you look at the comparison, Honorable Chairperson and the members, starting from 18-19 financial year, the department was not mainly going out on the tendering process. We relied on the transfer payment methodology that we used to apply. However, in order for us to ensure that we are aligned to the regulations and the transparency in line with the Constitution, we had to ensure that we follow the normal processes. If you look at the comparison, the size of the procurement plan for the department has drastically increased from 105 and 62 tenders in 1920 to 293 in this current financial year. So all those areas all those areas requires that we need to monitor from each and every level, starting from when we develop the specifications, so that we are clear about what will go out to the public and not find ourselves having to cancel tenders at the later stage. I think the DG highlighted this area when we're looking at the EP performance, whereby we had to relook at the terms of reference after the fact at the time when we have to award. So this is where the department is because of the change in the methodology and how we had to look at the compliance issues. As much as the irregular expenditure of the department is still high, We entered into multi-year non-compliant contracts. So as and when we are still paying up until those contracts expire, the irregular expenditure increases. So the manner the delays that we had to encounter in SCM was to look at how everyone else understands the manner in which we have to follow those processes and also try to be compliant in each and every process that we follow, so that we avoid the delays that we end up encountering in the implementation of the project. So those are the steps that we just felt that we need to put up front and be transparent to the committee, so that we understand the history and how we are planning to move forward in ensuring that we are compliant. Then on the next slide, yes, we did have issues on the capacity in the SDM space, because as much as the department grew in the size, the core business, it grew in the core business part, the support structure, we had issues with the capacity in the SDM space to be in a position to look at the size of our procurement plan. We have filled in all the director positions and deputy director positions in that space. And also we looked at getting even interns and temporary appointments just to assist in clearing the baseline and also the foundation of the things that we needed to have. We also have a service provider in place to assist us with the templates and all the compliant issues that are required in SCM, so that moving forward, we instill the culture of the compliance and also which will not affect delivery in that space. We also have re-looked at our policy. I think I indicated this earlier on. We looked at our SCM policy and the delegations so that we minimize non-compliant issues that will emanate in irregular expenditure at a later stage. And also those have been workshopped with the department, and also starting from the people that will be looking at the specifications that will be evaluating up to the adjudication area, where the adjudication is also conducted on a weekly basis, chaired by the CFO, and also all the DDGs are part of those committees. And then I think I spoke to the issues of the templates that we are aligning ourselves to, so that moving forward we don't experience issues that we have on SCM challenges in the department. And then on a weekly basis, what we are doing, I think that's the next slide. On the weekly basis, as one of the areas to improve even the expenditure in the 2022-23 financial year, we have meetings both with the SCM unit and also the budget section, which monitors the expenditure, also with the line function, so that we address individual bottlenecks that are in the process in trying to ensure that we accelerate and improve on our spending versus the procurement plan, because that has a ripple effect on the performance of the department. We will report also this to the DG on a bi-weekly basis, and it's something that we are instilling, and not only that the sessions are happening at a DDG level, they happen at the program management level, because in order for us to ensure that we build proper substantiating supporting documents, even for our reporting time, we also had to ensure that the program managers are also part of the value chain. And then in the office of the CFO, there is with the structure that has just been concurred, we have a directorate that is called internal control. That is a new position that has been introduced in line with the new structure. We will be conducting, the shortlisting has already happened of that position directorate. We are hoping that we will be doing the interviews in September 2022 so that we can have an independent person that will monitor the compliance issues and also ensure that even when we submit our financial statements, all the supporting documents are in place. I think that's it on my side, Honorable Chairperson and the members. Thank you so much. Okay.
Chairperson, if you are, and the members are agreeable, can I suggest, because we've been through the underperforming branches very extensively in the performance improvement plan, can I suggest that we just ask the DDGs from the four branches that we haven't covered regulatory compliance, oceans and coasts, climate change and chemicals and waste. Can I suggest we just take the presentations on those four branches and then we will have plenty of time for questions on the areas that we've covered quite extensively. We are guided by you, Chair.
I think that is in order. Let's follow that.
Then so it's regulatory compliance, oceans and coasts, climate change, and chemicals and waste in that order. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Good day to Honourable Chair members and Minister DG and colleagues. I will quickly deal with the red and yellow. Next slide, please. Okay, with regard to the national environmental compliance and enforcement, one of our biggest challenge was the contractor. We had to cancel the contract, and we did try during that financial year to try and procure a new service provider to implement this particular project. Unfortunately, we were unable to get any proposals, and we had to go through National Treasury and engaged to try and see if we could get a suitable service provider. We did manage to appoint GTAC through National Treasury, and we're in the process at the moment in terms of trying to ensure that this is achieved. Next slide. The other area that we were read was the environmental management tool. This is the financial provisioning regulations, which required a substantial amount of comments. And we received a substantial amount of comments. And this took quite a considerable amount of time to deal with. This is quite a complex piece of regulations. The issues raised required substantial amendments, and it did necessitate a re-gazetting. These regulations have since been consulted through the working groups. They have already been published and gazetted for comments. The comments were in this financial year, we've managed to close the comment period on Friday, the 26th of August, and we're in the process of collating the comments and responses. We will workshop these particular regulations with PASA and DMRE, and hopefully the comments will not be too substantial and that we will be able to finalize these particular regulations in this financial year. The other area where we were yellow in was regarding the minimum requirements for the submission of shale gas installations. We did commit in the last financial year to ensure that these would be published in this financial year. These have also been gazetted for public consultation. The comment period has closed on the 26th of August. We are in the process of collating the comments and responses there too, and hopefully these will be published also for implementation in this financial year. I think, Chair and Minister, that is all from my side, apart from the fact that we have actually over-exceeded on a number of our other targets. Thank you, Minister and Chair.
Thank you, Vanessa. Who's next? Oceans and Coasts.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Lisolomzi Fikizol. I'm trying to put on the camera here. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to you, and good morning to the honorable members, and good morning to you, Minister, as well as my colleagues and the DG. I will be talking on the red that we had, which is about the master plan, particularly jobs, which were in the main from the aquaculture sector. I would say the issue there was all the statistics, all the numbers were not necessarily created within the department, but rather from the sector itself. and there were delays in submitting those statistics or those numbers into the department. But we can derive pleasure in knowing that at the moment those have been given to the department, and our economist is busy compiling all of those numbers. Next slide, please. And the yellow there on the marine special planning sector plans was non-participation delays rather in information from other sister departments, and that really caused delays in finalizing what the branch wanted to develop. And as such, the matter ended up being escalated to the DG's forum, and as we speak, it is in front of the DG's forum for their intervention. And with management plans for marine protected areas, the delay was mainly due to sourcing of funding, because when we say we'll be developing an MPA plan, we know that it takes a period of 12 months, but due to the delays in the transfer of funds, then it meant that we're late off the starting blocks, but we managed to catch up and finalize in the time that is specified in the report. Those two management plans, which is the Charles Bank and the Orange Shelf Edge MPAs, that are offshore MPAs in the West Coast. And with the biodiversity management plans, that is our red. That red was due to the fact that the biodiversity management plan was to be presented to the consultative advisory forum, and then that caused some delays in terms of finalizing it, particularly the last bit of it where we were to get comments from the public, and those have been concluded on the 22nd of August, and where we've received more than 300 comments, which we are currently processing. Next slide, please.
Am I the only one who lost him?
Yeah, I can still hear. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Jacques. If we can move back a bit with one.
I can hear as well.
All right. And then with the permits, there was an issue with our capacity, which impacted on our ability to process all those permits that we were due to process, because the staff that was processing those had to also go and do the verification of the premises and facilities and of the applicants. But what we've come up with was to have a collaboration process in place, where we're working with EMIs, particularly from the compliance unit, as well as monitors from the Oceans and Coast Monitoring, so that they double up, particularly when it comes into inspections. And then we're able now to resolve the problem that we had in the third quarter. And that will be it for my side. And thank you, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, Minister.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Minister, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair and colleagues. On the climate change and air quality branch, there are two areas that were work in progress. The first one is around the compliance with the air quality ambient standard, of which there were some exceedance. And in this regard, the regulations have been published to strengthen implementation and compliance to ensure that we're able to be within the required standards. The second area of work was the air quality monitoring stations reporting to SAQIS to be able to achieve, of course, 70%, 75% of the recovery standard, and 70 ambient air quality monitoring station is an annual target. And by end of the financial year, 41 air quality monitoring station were reporting in comparison to the target of 70. And among other challenges included, of course, the issue of funding, improved maintenance, the issue of power failures and faulty equipment, vandalization of the stations as one of the key areas of challenge. And of course, the one of the corrective measures that have been put in place is to procure and deploy low-cost sensors technology for the monitoring stations, and also explore the partnership working with South African Weather Service to really assist municipalities to achieve improved maintenance. And thus far, we have been working with South African Weather Service to also put together the business case and facilitate engagement with Treasury. I think these were the two key areas, Chair. If you can just go down in terms of achievement, yes, we're at 89%. And those two areas constitute 11% of partially achieved. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. On slide 77, under Chemicals and Waste Management, for the fourth quarter, we were meant to achieve the final industry waste management plan that has been published for comments, and those comments considered in the revised plan submitted to Minister for approval. We could not achieve that target because of the delays in the informal consultations. Informal refers to before we publish in the Government Gazette, we ensure that we attend to substantive matters to avoid a situation where we have to republish for a few times. We have since published in March, and the period closed in April, and in that first quarter of this financial year, we were able to consider the comments and we are in the process of addressing the plan as part of this current financial year. On the next slide, slide 78, it also talks to waste tire management. We are meant to process waste tires. Our target for the fourth quarter was 25,540. We could not reach that target mainly because of breakages in the machinery of the processing facilities that assist with the processing. Some were able to attend to some partial processing. And in terms of the corrective measure, we are currently engaging with the National Treasury because some of the facilities that can assist us, they need an incentive. And for us to be able to pay the incentive, we need to ensure that we comply with the prescripts because of the financial implications. So we are finalizing that process with the National Treasury. The next area is on slide 79 with regard to the jobs created in the waste management sector. The one program where we are able to get jobs is under the Recycling Enterprise Support Program. We were not able to publish the calls to call for proposals in this space, and because we needed to change the process and the confirmation from National Treasury in terms of the grant consultation took time. And by the time we were ready to publish, we were also affected
by the advisory, because we also make use of the preferential procurement regulations. We have since were able to publish, and the calls closed in July. We are currently attending to the evaluation, and we should be able to create the jobs, especially the support to the SMMEs within the waste management sector. So overall, under Program 7, we were able to reach 82%, and those that were partially achieved, 12%, and the jobs indicator is the one that we could not meet for 6%. Thank you.
Are we done?
Sorry,
Minister. I was proposing that we cover also the financial part for the department. But obviously, I think some aspects have been covered. Chair, you will guide. And then the MLRF, it will be the financial part, because the program of fisheries has already been dealt with. So the financial part of MLRF and the department.
Let's do that quickly.
Thank you, DJ, and thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the members. On the expenditure part, I think I highlighted this area as I was looking at the improvement plan for the finances. Like I indicated, the department spent about 82% in the 2021-22 financial year, whereby we started the year at a very low pace. I think in quarter one, we only had achieved 17% for 2021-22, and that resulted in us overall achieving 82%. The main areas or the main programs where we had issues with were mainly Oceans and Coast, Program 3, Program 6, EP, whereby we achieved 71% at the end of the financial year, and also Program 8, Forestry. Then if we go to the next slide, that's where we highlight the expenditure at the economic classification level. We have achieved 76% for current expenditure, and transfers, we managed to achieve 97%. And for CAPEX, we were sitting at 81% as at the end of the financial year. We have since, Honorable Chairperson and the members, resuscitated and established the CFO forum and the SCM forum for the department, and also for the department and the entities, so that we look at the commonalities and the areas of challenges that we experience as the DFFE portfolio in order to assist in accelerating the expenditure moving forward. So we also discuss the issues of commonalities and how we can improve in our uniqueness of the commodities that we have to achieve as the department. Because if you look at the goods and services, we only achieve 63%, and that is mainly where we can necessarily say is the service delivery element that should be paid under that part. Then if we move to the next slide, I think I spoke to the initiatives and the measures that we have implemented in this year that will assist us in accelerating the expenditure, whereby we monitor the procurement plan on a weekly basis, and also improving and fast-tracking the tendering processes. We have the bid adjudication committee meetings that are taking place on a weekly basis in ensuring that we accelerate and improve on our processes. And then the last slide, I think that's where we are highlighting that for quarter one in 2022-23 financial year, we managed to achieve our set target of 23%, which was opposed to the 17% that we had in the previous financial year. And also, I think the DG spoke to the areas of concern, the two programs. trying to demonstrate the achievements that we had comparing quarter one last year and also quarter two in this financial year, whereby in EP this year we managed to achieve 20% as opposed to 11%, and also forestry we have improved compared to the 15%. However, we are still monitoring those on a bi-weekly basis with the DG so that we don't regress in the momentum that we have established as the department, and ensure that even in quarter two, we try to maintain the status quo and ensure that we improve moving forward. Also, those achievements are also monitored on a quarterly basis in the engagements that are being held between the minister, the DM, and the DGs trying to unblock all the challenges that are being encountered in the financial and also non-financial. I think that's about Honourable Chairperson and the members.
But the Marine Living Fund?
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Minister, and Honourable Members and DG. Very quickly, I'll take you through the Marine Living Resources Fund Quarter 4 report. I'd ask you just to ignore the 2021 column on the right-hand side and just focus on the first block. So in terms of revenue received, the fourth quarter actual collection is the third column, 198 million against the total annual budget of 543 million. So for quarter four, we overachieved in terms of collection, and quarter four represents 37% of the total revenue received for the year. If we can go to the next slide. In terms of total expenditure, again, the actual expenditure was 163 million, which was 95% of the projected expenditure and constituted 30% of the total expenditure for the year. And then the last slide. That just gives us a breakdown of the expenditure per economic classification from administrative costs, inventory costs, professional and specialized services, assets-related expenses, with the total capital expenditure for the quarter of 163 million. And that is the MLRF's quarter four report. And then perhaps I could just also indicate that, although we will do it on a separate occasion, just to indicate that the MLRF did receive an unqualified audit opinion, which we're very pleased about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I do think then that brings us to the end of the presentation. I am okay, Minister and DJ. It's right, ne?
Yes.
Okay, colleagues, can I have a show of hands of colleagues who want to interact with this presentation? It will be Honorable Phillips, followed by Honorable Bryant, followed by Honorable Weber. Those are the, followed by Honorable Gancho, Honorable Singh, in that order. Honorable Phillips, over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you to everyone for the presentation. I'm going to leave my camera off because my signal is not amazing either. I have a number of questions, and the commentary that we got from the department or from our portfolio colleagues had some of the questions in it, so I'm not going to cover those. I just hope that the department will address those ones. That was regarding the lower KPIs, the supply chain management, which seems to be rife with corruption, the duplication of programs. And then in the financials, I read a comment about the erstwhile resignations of people in the supply chain management. What I'd like to know is, was there any disciplinary action instituted against those people? If so, how many? And were there any criminal cases or criminal complaints opened against them? The environmental programs that are not performing, that is frightening, because that's what this portfolio is for, and that's office for the proper reporting. It concerns me that after so many years, we're still not getting reporting done in the proper format. So my question there is, were any consulting companies involved then? If so, what was the amount of the contracts? Then there was quite a high cost there for accommodation. And I'd like to know that cost. Does that include the accommodation that is being provided in the chalets in the Kruger National Park for staff and contract workers? And then the biodiversity management plans. These are absolutely critical, and they're not being met in the two of our species that are really on the brink of extinction. You know, you get things that are important, and then you get things that are urgent, and both with our rhinos and our African penguins, it's not even urgent anymore. They are critical, and the decline in their numbers is catastrophic. And the fact that these KPIs are still red is really, really unacceptable. These are the future of our children, and they're not the relevant urgency is not being given to them. For the air quality management, I've asked at two previous meetings for the locations of the air quality monitoring stations in and around Rustenburg. I still have not received those. The processing of old tyres, that waste storage site next to the N4 on the way to Mpumalanga, is just growing larger and larger and larger, and the tyres don't seem to be being utilised. So recycling is one of our critical responses, not only to unemployment, but also to the shortage of the landfill availability. Yet it seems to be the area, one of the areas that is really being neglected. So I would really like to see a faster movement on the recycling and then on the biodiversity management plans for our rhino and the African penguins. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Phillips. Honorable Weber, over to you.
Is it okay? Because Arnold Bryant was before me. Is that fine, Dave? Okay. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can.
My apologies for not putting my video on. Chair, I just have one or two questions. I think the first thing is I would like to iterate with Councillor Phillips regarding the sincerity of the rhinos and the penguins. I don't think in general with many of these things that a KPI and a BMP and a plan and everything is the enforcement. And I do believe that we need to consider where we stand ordinary normal to do emergency plan or crisis plan that can immediately be executed, because this takes quite a long time to do all these things, and then the execution and the training and the enforcement. And while we're doing all of these, unfortunately, these animals are disappearing. So I am asking that we do something immediately on the ground, whether we call it emergency or crisis plan or whatever, but going down to the ground and effectively combat these two, these more, but specifically the rhino and the penguin. So my question, the one is on the environmental programs. I'm very concerned about the environmental programs. I have a specific question there. and that is regarding the EPWP. You talk about you're getting entities to pay for them and everything. So my question is a specific case of the Roodepoort Dam, where we have EPWP workers. Are they still working there? And then if they're still working, how effective they are, because next year is the regatta, the international regatta, and we stop the community to actually be effective like they was, because we have to have the EPWP workers. My understanding is this is just not working. So the replacement of the community running the management of the dam with EPWP, which is not successful. I just would like to know what we do in that case if you don't get people to pay them or they're not effective. Because that is also a crisis in itself, because economically, job creation, it is a good publicity for South Africa. Then the monitoring stations has always been a problem with me, and recently I had an incident in one of my constituencies in Mpumalanga, and I can honestly say thank you to Minister Barbara Krisi for really resolving this issue. But on the ground, I ran into issues. It was serious air pollution. And even the EMIs in Kangala couldn't tell me where's the air monitoring station. They didn't know. Then someone else let me know where this is, and no one knows where it is. I couldn't find the number to contact. I couldn't go anywhere. And I still see on the reporting back, we still talk about vandalism and everything. Colleagues, I'm requesting a list of all the air monitoring systems where they are. I know they say in the Kangala there's one. I can't find it. So either there's something wrong with me or the information is not supposed to be for everyone, but one of our major problems is the ineffectiveness of our air quality monitoring centers. I don't say that you haven't tried to put them up, but every time it's vandalizing or this is not happening or this is not happening, again, we come back down to the fact that air quality is a problem. So can we please maybe have to the committee at least where the air monitoring systems are, well, who the contact number is, because Mpumalanga specifically, where it is supposed to be for every a municipality, this has moved to the three districts that is there, and they non-existent. Then regarding the EPW programs and the environmental programs, the EPW program is not the only environmental program. Can we have a breakdown of all the EP environmental programs that there are, and a breakdown on each of them of their performance, so that we can see where the problem is specifically? That is if I can refer to Roodepoort again. And then I want to ask, I am under the impression that the CBD is also part of the environmental programs, or was. So can we have a program of all the environment, a breakdown of every single environmental program that we have, and of each one's performance regarding expenditure and the performance of them all? Thank you very much. Oh, and the last thing, Chair, I really would like to commend the department on the plants and the consequence management, and the upping of the supply chain management performance, and I really do think that is a big 100% better performance than we have seen previously. So thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Weber. Honorable Brian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, just firstly, in terms of the environmental programs, I mean, that spend of 33% in quarter four is abysmal, absolutely abysmal. And I think all of those officials should be taken to task and dealt with properly and very strongly through the existing performance management system. The one thing that doesn't seem to make sense to me is we have a 33% success rate there in terms of targets achieved, but a 71% spend. If I can get some clarification as to how that works, because something there doesn't seem right to me. I see for quarter one, it seems to have increased up into the 60s, but how did one spend 71% and only achieve 33% of the targets? I don't really understand that. Fisheries management, 54% in quarter four. Also, really, really poor performance there. And if that one compares that with, you know, the successes that are being trumpeted around fisheries management, and we look at a 54% for quarter four, that also doesn't seem to make sense. And things just don't really seem to be getting any better in terms of fisheries management, sadly. In terms of management of the poor performance, I hear what my colleague, Honorable Weber, has said in terms of giving credit in some instances. But what I'd like to find out is, in terms of managing that poor performance, the official, it was DG who mentioned, in terms of managing that performance, that one looks at whether or not there's been an improvement, and that goes all the way down to the last step just before you take disciplinary action. You then look and see whether there's been an improvement in the performance. How much improvement is required in order to avert disciplininary action? So I was saying again, how much improvement is required in order for that official to avert disciplinary action? Is it 1% better, 0.5% better? Is there a barometer to say, well, this person has achieved a significant improvement, therefore we're not going to take any disciplinary action against them? Or can they avoid that by improving by you know, half a percentage point? In terms of this proposed interim payment plan for the environmental programs, seems a little bit concerning to me, to be honest, this kind of hybrid e-wallet slapdash system that's being looked into. If I was a worker, I wouldn't have a heck of a lot of confidence in terms of that and ensuring that I get paid at the end of the day. So I really think that needs to be really properly consolidated and nailed down in terms of how these staff are going to get paid for these environmental programs. I don't think anybody is going to be happy with the system that's still kind of in progress and being cobbled together. Has the department been meeting with private rhino owners in terms of the development of these plans that were mentioned? I know that many of the private rhino owners have mentioned that they are in the dark when it comes to a lot of the plans that are being put forward, and that they're not getting the opportunity to consult directly. Are these meetings now taking place? Because I do think that's a very important aspect of developing the plans. And what actually specifically has caused the delay in that rhino management strategy? I hear that it was delayed, but what was it that caused that specific delay? Tender 1590, certainly a massive failure, unfortunately, and one can blame it on tender processes, etc., but It is a failure of the department, unfortunately. There should have been something that was foreseen and planned for. I'm glad to hear that some of the right noises are now being made in terms of effectively devolving some of the authority down to more localized areas. But it puts the jobs of thousands of people at risk. And it really is something that should never have happened. I know that we are going to have this item served before our committee in a couple of meetings' time, so I think we can get the specific details at that meeting. How much money, and maybe Ms. Benderman can assist with this, how much money has been spent by the department in terms of litigation? We're talking about particularly projects that have consequences. FRAP, for instance, the litigation that's taking place there. How long is that appeals process, that litigation that's going to continue for a while? Is there any expected sort of estimate of how much that litigation is going to cost the department and ultimately taxpayers? The aquaculture bill, where is this really at the moment? We keep hearing mentions around it, we have also heard that there are a number of disagreements internally around the makeup of the bill, certain racial targets that have been put in place, for instance. There's disagreement around that. I think it's really about time that we start to properly interrogate that and get that before us. In terms of the public-private partnerships and the non-disclosure, please can you be a little bit more specific in terms of which partnerships these were and why this took place, and also whether or not any action's been taken against the officials concerned. The overstatement of capital projects completed is another one. How does one overstate the number of capital projects and think that's going to be okay? You know, it's the equivalent of telling the teacher you've done your homework and you haven't done your homework. It's really not something that we should be seeing. And again, I hope that action is being taken from a performance management and a disciplinary point of view there. What do you mean in terms of going out to market for marine protected areas? Surely this is a function of government. We have marine protected areas such as the Table Mountain National Park Marine Protected Area, which was declared in 2004, 18 years ago, was supposed to have been implemented within 6 months, and it still hasn't been finalized. What's going on in terms of that? How can we have confidence that this new plan is going to work? So what do you mean in terms of taking those to market? Tender process and supply chain management are a central challenge. It's a central issue through, it runs as a common thread throughout so many of the presentations that we've seen, and it really is something that's a consistent failure and it has to be addressed. These small achievements, where SCM and tender processes are done correctly, aren't things that we should be celebrating and popping the champagne for. Those are things that are supposed to be taking place in any instance. As they say, you don't praise the fish for swimming. Ms. Benjamin, in terms of regulatory compliance, that first tender that was cancelled for the bad work and non-compliance, has this contractor been blacklisted so that we don't end up with the situation that they come back on and delay our processes again? Mr. Fikizola, in terms of oceans and coasts, I see we're supposed to create 1,200 jobs. That was one of the red items. You said that we must take pleasure in knowing that the stats have been submitted. I assume this means that we've exceeded that target of 1,200 jobs. How many jobs have been created through that operation, Pekisa, that you mentioned? Can you give us those exact numbers, please? Why do we still have a moratorium on new fisheries? And how long is that moratorium intended to last? And then I think the last one, just in terms of harbors, in one of the presentations, it was mentioned that our harbors are working wonderfully well. I personally visited Half Bay Harbor myself a couple of weeks ago. And the slipway is not in a very good condition. From what I've heard, people are being brought in from outside to operate that. I mean, that's aside from all of the other crumbling infrastructure. I know a lot of that has got to do with the Department of Public Works and that minister. But certainly DFFE has a significant role to play. So if we could just hear a little bit more, particularly in terms of Half Bay Harbour and the functionality there, because I think there are some serious challenges that need to be addressed. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Next is Honorable Gancho.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to request that I close, switch off the video for connectivity. Thank you, Chair. Let me appreciate the presentations that were made. I have just few questions. Under administration, it's mentioned that there's over expenditure of 9.2 million. And my question thereof is, what drove the over expenditure between office accommodation and salaries, and why? And also, Chair, one of the committee resolutions had been for the department and entities to develop a unified awareness program where they will reach out to rural and township about career and bursary opportunities in the environmental sector. How far are the department and the entities in responding to that directive? Second, under oceans and coast, just want to ask the department, which municipalities are roped in to carry the MPA management responsibilities? And are they capacitated to fully execute that function? And I think the last one, Chairperson, is on the climate change and air quality. What does the department expect from coastal district municipalities after training them on the coastal risk and vulnerability tool? Are they committed personnel and funds to use the tool? Because the reason why I'm asking this, Chair, our concern is that many unfunded responsibilities are dumped on municipalities and they may never be implemented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Sorry I was not with you at the beginning of the meeting. I had a few connectivity problems. But greetings to you and the minister and everybody that's online. Chairperson, let me say quite honestly right up front that this is the first time that I've been dismayed and disappointed with the department in terms of what they have been telling us and the dismal performance of some of the branches. And whilst we have heard the reasons for that, I think it's a cause for concern. But I think the light at the end of the tunnel is the interventions by the Minister and the Director General in getting everybody together. And even before I go into specific questions, I'd like to suggest that perhaps those red branches, those branches that have been flagged, as below 50% in terms of performance, need to be called back by us in a matter of a month or so, with the DG and the minister to tell us exactly what progress is being made to ensure that resources are being spent efficiently. That brings me, Honorable Chairperson, to the issue of, setting targets. And I've said this in other committees, and I'm even saying it here, that, departments set targets. And sometimes one wonders what informs these targets, because I noticed that there's been a reduction of some of the annual targets. And, one can, and I'm not saying this has happened, one can manipulate targets, to make it two instead of six and say at the end of the year, we've done 100% in terms of KPI. So I think we'd just like to know what informs targets. Is it informed by needs on the ground? Is it informed by what are the imperatives our targets set? Then on the question of the oceans and coasts, I think Honorable Chairperson, the issue of the marine protected areas. I mean, I was on the committee a few years ago when, you know, we had an announcement by the then minister of a number of marine protected areas. And it's a good thing to do because, I mean, we want to conserve the environment and the oceans and fisheries. But I think it was more as a result of pressure, from us trying to set international standards. And I hope that's not the case because, you know, how many of these MPAs are functional and how many of them are we maintaining what we are supposed to do? I asked specifically about the Aliwal Shoal because that's an area I came from and the minister is aware of some problems we had there. And I know there was going to be some amendments to the regulations to ensure that, you know, ordinary fishermen have more access without damaging the environment. Has that process been completed? And then on the question of climate change and air quality, when even looking at the climate change bill, you know, one finds that the responsibilities that we intend placing on municipalities might be a bit overbearing for them in terms of the fact that funds won't follow functions. And can we just have some clarity on, you know, how we are going to approach this? If these department branches are not performing well, we at a national level, and now we want to pass some responsibilities to local government, and we know the state of local government. How are we going to manage this? I think my second last question would relate to forestries. I think, Chair, long before you came into this committee, I've always had this view that that branch should not exist, and that for all forests should be, you know, transferred to the private sector and not even be managed by the state. Now, the performance or the underperformance here, kind of confirms this kind of thinking that I have. And maybe we need to be convinced that, yes, VA is a branch that is effective, that it's functioning, and that can perform the function that it has been set out to. And lastly, on the fisheries management, we've been speaking about the small scale fishers, and it's sad to see sometimes people appearing on television communities talking about the fact that they are being ignored. Do we have sufficient staff to be able to attend to the needs of the people in this fisheries sector all over? Are we doing enough? I see Honorable Paulson's not on, but I know he's very, very passionate about the fishermen and the small-scale fishermen and the fishing industry. So give us some hope, Minister and DG, rising out of the support. But I still once again want to suggest that we need to meet those branches through the DG and the minister that are underperforming. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Singh. You seem to have been the last person to ask the questions. I don't see any other end. Then mine is with regards to the presentation of the DPSA, the performance management requirement. You have done that. And then as the performance management tool, especially in terms of the disciplinary processes being implemented against the senior management staff of the department. And then what senior positions did those individuals who are being disciplined occupy? And that what were the outcomes of those disciplinary hearings? And then The other issue, one looking at the committee's report on the department's annual performance plan and the budget vote 32 of May 2021, one realized that in responding to the issue of inadequate performance by various departmental programs, and the minister mentioned that any performance under 80% was unacceptable. Then I just want to know, DG, whether this is still an issue. Yes, I see that we are becoming comfortable with the achievement of only 75%. Are we then still at that benchmark that was set by the minister? The other colleagues have raised the issue around environmental programs, and then we note what we have been that has been done. But I should think all of us, we should be very much concerned about this, because though you are busy attending to the compliance, supply chain management, it now sounds like it's a broken record, and our communities there are looking at us that we need to contribute towards fighting poverty, unemployment, and inequality. One is of the view that much more needs to be done. It's either if you are project planning, but we understand the fact that you are saying as and when you phase out the existing contractors, but I should think much more needs to be done so that we don't then find ourselves underspending the budgets that have been provided to us. We attended the other meeting where this issue of underspending was raised. And then I think we were directed these committees to also look at that, to say departments must then come clean to us and tell us what are they going to do, because it's really an indictment to us also as the committee to fail to do oversight. When budget, we allocate budgets at the end of the day, then they didn't get spent. So those are the issues that one wanted to seriously raise. Maybe depending on the answer and the time, then one will be able to follow up on some of the questions that colleagues have raised, especially the issue that the colleagues have also raised with regard to the fishery management. Because I think it will be key and prudent for us to also understand if the department can also confirm your readiness for the court judgment, because if the Western Cape High Court grants the department's petition of scraping the outcomes of the small scale fishing rights allocation in the Western Cape, how soon would then the new scale fishing rights be allocated or concluded in the Western Cape? And then on that one as well, one wants to get an update on the removal of sunken vessels, dredging repair and upgrades to slipway shore crane replacement, and including the civil and electrical infrastructure repairs. These were all supposed to have been completed by 2020. So the other issue was with regard to an outstanding matter on the operational budget to cover the mandate of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure and this department, so that there are no unfunded activities or nothing falls through the cracks in the harbor management and operation. In line with this, there was going to be a joint plan to manage the harbor, including all its activities. Then I think it will be good for us to be given the progress in report to that effect as to what could have been achieved thus far. Over to you, DG. I should believe the minister will come at the end or the other way around. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the committee members for the questions. Maybe deal with a couple of issues, and then the DG and the DGs will deal with the details. Let me say at the outset that the view of the Deputy Minister and myself is that last year's performance by certain branches in the department is totally unacceptable. And I fully agree with committee members who have expressed the view that in a situation where Treasury allocates scarce resources to departments who fail to adequately spend that money, it's a public disgrace. And that is why, as soon as we received the year-end outcomes on the 5th of May, we would have received them on the 30th of April. We held that workshop and we gave a clear instruction to the Director General to institute an performance improvement plan in the underperforming departments. Clearly, this is what was required, because we now see that there is quite a significant turnaround in those branches. And I want to assure you, Member Bryant, that if you think I'm going to accept a 1 or 2% improvement to 35% in environmental programs, and I'm going to think that's acceptable, I'm not. So I think we very much welcome Honourable Singh's suggestion that those underperforming branches appear more regularly before this committee. Because all of us who are elected public representatives have a public responsibility to ensure that government delivers on what it says it will deliver. We are taking the necessary administrative actions, but clearly a little bit more help from the public legislature would be most welcome. And I would want to support that. Honourable Mutambi, my standard is still 80%. I think in a situation where we had branches that were performing so significantly below what anybody in their right mind could consider to be acceptable. Sorry, I've just put off my camera because it says my internet is unstable. I think in a situation where you do have a number of branches that are performing significantly below what can be acceptable, it's important to focus. And that is what we have done. But we would expect that even branches that are at 72-75% need to get back closer to the 80% mark. We understand that there are always externalities that impact on branch performance, and that's why one would be more comfortable with the 80% target, because there could be externalities. But to come with 33%, it's not going to be acceptable. I think so. Let's agree with Honourable Singh's proposal. I think it's a good proposal. With regard to small scale, I'm hoping that tomorrow we will get a good outcome in the Western Cape High Court. We have met with all the small scale associations. There's general support for the approach we're taking. We have dealt with communities that felt that they were going to be excluded. And I think that we will be very glad if we get that court finding, because that is going to give us the opportunity to put small scale in the Western Cape on a more stable footing, the way that we have that situation in the rest of the country. Honourable Singh, in the end, what is going to improve the position of small scale fishermen is the allocation of TAC, or a significant portion of the catch. And you would know that we have made that decision with regard to squid. We have been challenged by the commercial sector. That matter will go to court and the courts will decide. We had also indicated that when the FRAP process is concluded, we would want to be allocating TAC in terms of hake handline and in terms of lionfish to the small scale sector. And those matters remain on the agenda. And I believe that it is this allocation of TAC that is going to represent the only sustainable solution to the problems that small scale fisher persons have. Because at the moment, in many instances, the catch is not viable. And it's really an access to a viable catch that is going to deal with these processes. With regard to the issue of penguins, I can say that the biodiversity management plan is complete. It's out for public comment. I can also say that we will shortly be making an announcement with regard to the issue of island closures. And I agree with the honourable members who are urging officials to deal with the issue of penguins in an expeditious manner, that this situation is extremely serious and does need to get a lot of attention. With regard to the monitoring stations and with regard to the performance of local government in air quality, we have taken a proposal to MINMEC that in instances where provinces fail to adequately attend to issues of air quality, this matter should be devolved. Sorry, where local government fails to deal with them, with matters, that this matter should return to provinces, who are the authorities from whom this power was devolved. We are in discussion with provinces on this matter, and we are prioritizing the high salt priority area and also the Vaal area, the two priority areas. There are, as well as the Durban South Basin, I think those would be three of the significant hotspots. So we are prioritizing those areas for attention by provinces. And also, of course, these would be the areas where SOARS is also trying to raise, well, in fact, has raised the money from us for a three-year program to fix up the air monitoring stations, because we recognize that these are the areas where there is a significant difficulty that really needs to be properly addressed by government at every level. I don't know what litigation there is around FRAP, Member Bryant. We are in the appeals process. I don't have any litigation in relation to FRAP on my desk. But maybe you are hatching litigation that I don't know about, so I'll see it when it comes. I think that's all I would want to say at this stage, honourable members. I would like to hand over to the department to take us through the detail on the questions that you have asked.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, honourable members. I'm going to ask the DDGs to respond. There's a number of questions that they need to be providing the committee responses, detailed responses to. I am going to come back and deal with the issue of our setting of targets and the accepted level at which when interventions are implemented, what is the accepted level? And I think Minister has made it very clear. It's a question from Honourable Bryant and also from the Chairperson. As a department, we're maintaining the 80%. 75% is a guide that we get from DPME, but we have maintained that 80% should be the actual performance, and we are still aiming to deal with that. We're still aiming to achieve the 80%. So I will come back on some of the issues that have been highlighted. With your permission, Chair, can I request the DDGs to respond to the specific matters, and then I will come back at the end. Thank you.
Yes, let's get the DDGs to respond.
Maybe we can start with BNC, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Good morning to the committee minister and colleagues. In respect of the rhinos, I need to indicate that we just completed review of the 2013 biodiversity management plan. And as part of that...
DDG, are you having connectivity problem?
Not that I'm aware of, Chair. Am I audible now?
Put your video on this, like what the DG and the minister have been doing.
Okay. Thank you. In case my network is unstable, I will switch off the video. I needed to indicate that in respect of the rhinos, that we have completed the review of the BMP. It has highlighted areas that we need to focus on in respect of areas of improvement in respect of biological management. As part of that, what we have also done is to take stock of all the rhino-related initiatives that we have engaged on since 2013. This will include the outcome of the Committee of Inquiry, which you are aware of. It made about 5 recommendations. And it will also include matters related to the Rhino Lab, and also include the recommendations of the high-level panel. So we have just concluded stock-taking in respect of all those initiatives, including the review of the BMPs for both the black and the white rhinos. I also need to indicate that the committee will be aware that we did meet with rhino stakeholders in July. We've also met them again in October. And as part of this exercise that we are doing, and in line with the recommendations and the priorities that we have identified, we are developing an overall rhino conservation and recovery plan, which will have a number of components related to that. The biggest component of that will obviously be BMP, as I indicated. We will be looking at matters related to enforcement and compliance, matters related to demand management, and matters related to how we then build partnerships and create a relationship with rhino private owners. I further need to indicate that the South African National Parks has also completed their own rhino conservation strategy, which we are going to then use as part of the consolidation of this overall rhino conservation strategy and recovery plan for the country. As indicated, the BMP that we are developing will be ready for public consultation by the end of third quarter in 2023. This exercise, as you would appreciate, is quite a very intense exercise, in the sense that it involves both scientific and biological aspects. It also involves a number of areas related to enforcement and compliance, related to community empowerment, and related to partnerships. So once we have completed, as we have initiated this process, and as the white paper process is being concluded, we are concluding the stakeholder consultations also. We will then come to a stage where we will then engage with the stakeholders in respect of the new BMP that is going to be developed for both black and white rhinos. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to request the environmental program. There were a number of questions coming through.
Thank you, DG. Good day to the Minister, the Chair of the Committee and the members. The first question that I'd like to respond to comes from, is the question from Honourable Phillips. And for me, it's starting off with an acknowledgement that, I mean, there's no way to justify the poor performance of the branch. I would, however, want to, or would like to just highlight that 2020, 2021, and 2022, in particular 2021-22, were significant years for the branch in that what the CFO and the DG alluded to, that there was a change in the manner in which we were working with our service providers from a contracting perspective. So that change from the advance payment to the order-based system where we're paying for actual goods and services delivered. As indicated earlier, I mean, there was a possibly an underestimation of the work that was involved in the transition, but also what I'm not going to repeat what the DG had highlighted earlier, in terms of the cancellation of tender E1509, which was the big NRM tender, the Natural Resources Management tender. And that cancellation had implications in terms of what we were able to deliver in the previous financial year. I would also like to highlight, as per a comment from the DG, that there are plans that we are implementing as a branch, basically re-engineering the branch in terms of making sure that there are systems in place that allow us to deliver as expected, that we're building the capacity, the project management and contract management capacity, which also relate to various findings against the branch by the AG. So it's for me, it's just highlighting that, I mean, even though we are not justifying or defending the poor performance, there are actions that we are taking at the level of the branch to make sure that we strengthen our ability and systems to deliver. In terms of the question by Honorable Weber, I would like to just say that in terms of Rode Blood, there is a process that's currently unfolding to appoint service providers for the clearing at the dam. And in this regard, we are working with our stakeholders, for example, Rowing SA, in terms of just making sure that while that we are awaiting the conclusion of that process, that there is some form of clearing that is happening at the dam. So there is no team that is currently active at this point, but we expect that we would have a team latest towards the end of September or early October this year as the processes are concluded. In terms of the question that relate to provision of more detail in terms of which of the working four programs are not performing, we will be able to provide that information by updating what was, because previously we had made a submission just providing the scope of the working four programs, and that information will then be updated in terms of where are the issues of concern when it comes to performance and underperformance. In response to the question by Honorable Bryant, with regard to the possible misalignment between the expenditure and the performance, I would just like to highlight that in terms of how we report on performance, we report on performance in terms of achieved, where we've made 100%, and also performance where it's work in progress, but also areas where we have not, where the target has been missed. So in that regard, even though the branch achieved 33% in terms of 100% performance in line with the target, so we were in those in that regard, we would have met or exceeded performance. But it does not necessarily mean that there was no other areas where there was performance. For example, we incurred expenditure in areas where indicated in the performance report as work in progress. So in those areas, for example, on follow-up clearing and other aspects of our ATP, there was expenses or expenditure incurred while we were executing those projects. Even in the areas where we were off target, for example, the initial hectares and the training, there was work that was happening on the ground. And when those, these three areas in terms of what was achieved, what was work in progress and what was off target, all then comprise or when consolidated relate to the 71% expenditure. On the issue of the NetBank system, the system that by NetBank has been in place with the department since 2020, and it's a preferable system, and I'm just mentioning NetBank, but previously there was a process that was in place by with Postbank. It allows us as a department to be, if for lack of a better word, in control in terms of the timeliness of stipends, payment of stipends to the participants. And at this point, it's not a system in this mode of payment. It's not a system that is applied across the branch, but it is applied at points within, for example, in terms of where we are doing in-house project management and also certain infrastructure projects. So in those instances where we're not paying through a net bank, the payment is done as usual through the appointed service providers. I think from my side, those are all the questions, Dichi. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mkhize. We can move to forestry management.
Good day to the Honorable Chair and members, and Minister, DG and colleagues. In terms of forestry, we have noted and the low performance in terms of the branch, and we've looked at how we will try and make sure that we are able to perform going forward. And in terms of the question specifically raised on the existence of the branch and the possible transfer of these plantations such that we do not manage them directly as the state, the department is already executing that plan through the work that is being done in the Commercial Forestry Master Plan, where we have already identified a number of plantations that are earmarked for the transfer. And we have already committed on a catch-up plan to make sure that the plantations that are due for transfer are being done. We've also had discussions with the relevant sister departments that would then assist us in making sure that the transfer is possible, such as the Department of Land Reform and Rural Development, to assist us in terms of a collaboration on conflicts with communities and also with the Department of Traditional Affairs. So I think from our side, we have recognized the need to make sure that these plantations are transferred, and we have started with that process to make sure that there is fast tracking of the plantations to be managed elsewhere, so that as a branch, we can then start to focus on providing the sector leadership, the policy development, and also the enforcement and compliance functions as required by our National Forest Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move to fisheries management. Didiji.
Good morning again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There were a couple of questions for fisheries. The first one from Honourable Bryant regarding the status of the aquaculture bill. At the request of the industry stakeholders who requested additional time for public comment, we extended the public comment period to the end of July. and we as the fisheries branch are busy processing all the comments. There is a two-day workshop, internal workshop, tomorrow and Friday, Thursday and Friday, where the comments will be analyzed. It is a work in progress as the comments are accepted. The bill has been updated. So we will be shortly submitting the bill to Minister for approval, the revised bill, and thereafter it will go through the Cabinet and parliamentary process. There were several questions, both from Honourable Bryant as well as the chairperson regarding the status of the harbours and the maintenance of the harbours. And I think, as members will be aware, the management of the fishing harbours is a dual mandate between ourselves and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, whereby the Department of Public Works is responsible for the maintenance of all the infrastructure, including the slipways, whereas the fisheries branch is responsible for the day-to-day fisheries operations within the harbour. I can report that the sunken vessels in Hart Bay have been removed by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, they have had a maintenance and upgrading program in the key harbours, including Hart Bay, Gordons Bay, and Cork Bay. However, Hart Bay remains a concern for both departments as the Public Works upgrade the infrastructure. There is quite a lot of vandalism, so we are now looking at increasing the security and access control to Hart Bay in particular. Then Honourable Singh and Honourable Bryant also asked about our readiness to assist with the small scale. I think Minister has indicated that we are anticipating a favourable outcome in tomorrow's judgment. But a lot of the past 2 months have been internal preparations that as soon as the court judgment is handed down, that we will be ready to start the implementation process. We had a workshop yesterday with all the CBOs, where they raised a number of issues that we have agreed to. And they've also raised the issue that they would prefer that the communities be given more time to submit their applications rather than less time, and we will be looking at that. We have also appointed 2 service providers to assist us to make sure that the process is independent and free and transparent. We have also reassigned a number of staff from other components to assist with the rollout in the Western Cape. So we are ready to start implementation as soon as we get the go-ahead. Yes, I think those are all the questions that were asked of fisheries. Just one last thing, Honourable Bryant mentioned litigation. I think Minister inherited litigation from FRAP 2015, which is still ongoing, particularly in the horse mackerel sector. And there are a number of reviews that are currently underway. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, can I request DDG Fisheries also to address the issue of capacity within the branch so that they address issues raised on the ground in relation to fisheries management, and there are various offices in the regions. I think DDG, let's respond to Honourable Singh's question. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. So as indicated, we have appointed a number of staff on contract to assist with the small scale and the fisheries management components. We have also had a number of vacancies, critical vacancies that have been vacant since our time in the Department of DAF Agriculture, which under DFFE we are in the process of filling. We are also appointing various people, especially those critical scarce skills on contract where it is funded through the MLRF. So we are slowly but surely addressing the capacity challenges. We are also piloting an online e-permitting process so that that will assist in the turnaround times for issuing of permits rather than expecting applicants to come to Cape Town or to use consultants to apply for permits. I think that hopefully addresses that capacity question. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll hand over to the CFO first on administration. There's a number of issues that were raised, and also to the DDG CMS, just on disciplinary matters, but also on our outreach. I think Honorable Gancho raised the issue of the extent at which we have outreach programs that go down to community levels. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Members, for the questions raised. Please accept my apologies once again, Honorable Chairperson and the members, for the video. My network is a bit unstable. There was a question that was asked regarding the consultants that were appointed in preparation of the financials. I can confirm, Honorable Members, that we did not have any service providers that assisted the department with the preparation of the financial statements. We did them as on our own in the department. And then to respond to the specific questions on the technical disclosures, I will start with the public-private partnership, which the department was qualified on in the previous financial year. This, Honorable Member, relates to the partnership that the department entered into with a service, with a private party for the design, the construction, the operation, and the maintenance of the department office accommodation, which is our environment house. The partnership was entered into in 2012. That was the initial construction, and then it was handed over to the department in 2014. As the department, we have been reporting and accounting for it in a consistent manner. Nothing changed even in the previous financial year. However, last year, AG had concerns with the manner in which we are accounting for certain technical line items within the disclosure note itself. As a result, as part of our audit action plan, we had engagements with the AG, with the PPP technical unit within the National Treasury, and also with the private party, whereby we had to explain and take AG through the base model that was specifically created for the department. And as a result, we intensified the manner in which we disclosed the financial statements. However, there were no errors that we had to rectify, meaning we did not effect any prior error adjustments in our financial statements. The balances that we disclosed in the previous year remained the same as the opening balances for the year that was under review, which was 2021-22 financial year. However, we had to expand on the note itself, and that resulted in the department having to clear the qualification item in that regard. So it was a matter that was previously raised last year. However, after extensive consultation, because PPP on its in nature is a very technical space, that's what we had. That's why we had to involve the people that are dealing with those from National Treasury. However, the matter has been cleared, and as a result, we are not qualified in this area. And then on the capital work in progress, it also is a qualification item that we had from last year, whereby in the projects, in the infrastructure projects that were built by the department, we accounted for everything and capitalized them in nature. However, AEG came on board last year and indicated that we seem to be overstating our capital projects, because if you look on the technicalities of how we disclose, if let's say, I'll make an example, there is an expenditure that was incurred for transporting operational issues, not necessarily transporting the material that should have been included in the infrastructure itself, we capitalized everything else. So because of the manner in which we used to contract with the service providers in the form of the advance payment, we could not get the details even from the invoices that we received from the service providers. And that then prompted us to go and look for the fair valuators that will go and look at the project itself and give us the value in which we should have capitalized for that in the books of the department, and then remove the other element that should have been operationalized. So that is the process that I indicated that we have consulted the Office of the Valuator General to assist us with all those capital projects within the country, so that we can adjust the books of the department and ensure that we capitalize whatever is involved in the actual project itself, and then the normal operational costs will be reported as goods and services. So that's the process that I alluded to earlier on, which could not be finalized during the audit process, and we are monitoring it in ensuring that we finalize it in this financial year. And then on the issue of the transfer payments to the MPAs, we signed MOUs with the MPAs in the past, of which they are expiring now in 2022. When we in the past, National Treasury granted us an exemption and said that we should continue or can continue with those transfers without necessarily following the normal SCM processes. However, this year when we requested, sorry, last year, 2021, when we requested for an exemption once again, because it was expiring now, when we requested to renew or to get another exemption, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer indicated that it's not a matter that should be granted by them, because from what they regard, as much as they are appointed or they are legislated MPAs, but it doesn't necessarily mean that in other parks that are surrounding our areas, that service cannot be done. And for us to be transparent and open, we need to be seen to go out to the market so that we don't close other areas. So that is the part that we're saying that National Treasury did not approve in this financial year. However, that resulted us therefore in ensuring that we make use of our entities in ensuring that we continue with other payments that are within our boundaries. But for other areas, we are still in engagement with the OCPO in ensuring that we don't get to be paralyzed because of the policies and procedures that we have as government. So, and I there's another a question that was asked regarding the overspending. The department, we did not overspend. We did not incur any unauthorized expenditure on any line item. I think on the compensation of employees in the presentation, it's seen as if we exceeded the 100%. It's mainly because the overall included even the Operation Pagisa, that we had an agreement with National Treasury that as and when we are making the payments, they are reflected as compensation of employees. However, by the end of the financial year, in the year-end shift environment, we had to ensure that we rectify that part. And therefore, as the department, we did not incur any unauthorized expenditure in the 2021-22 financial year. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Minister, and colleagues, and Honorable Members. In terms of the resignations, overall as a department, we had 67 resignations And this was for the whole department, not necessarily SCM. For those that which had disciplinary processes in SCM specifically, only two officials were disciplined. One was dismissed and one was actually given a sanction of 3 months suspension without salary. So we did not have resignations that which were linked with disciplinary processes. In terms of awareness sessions, we had four awareness campaigns that which were planned according to the thematic areas of climate change, environmental programs, Operation Pagisa, as well as FREP. In this operations, we have reached a number of schools as well as the overall community. But relating with these particular awareness sessions, we include both the thematic areas and also promote the services as well as bursaries and interns that which the department offers. In the year, the previous year, we have subsequently issued 128 bursaries in different fields linked with the department's core mandate and its support function. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will move to regulatory compliance. DDG, Vanessa.
Thank you, DG. I will respond to the questions raised. Firstly, Minister is correct in terms of the FRAP litigation. We have not received any litigation in terms of the recent FRAP process, the 2021. There is a process in terms of the appeals, which we still have to undergo. And in terms of trying to limit litigation costs, what we're looking at is we, as part of the appeals process, we have a team of counsel that will assist in the minister in the consideration of the appeals. And if there are review applications or litigation that emanate from that appeal, we will utilize the same counsel, which will reduce our litigation costs in terms of briefing those counsels. For the 2015-2016 FRAP process, DDG Middleton is correct. We have 5 reviews that are still pending, which is ongoing. In terms of the actual litigation costs, we wait for the claims from the state attorney's office. And at this stage, we have only received in the last financial year 1 claim, which was just under 40,000 Rand. So we're still awaiting the claims from the state attorney's office in order to determine our litigation costs, specifically in terms of fisheries matters. In terms of the blacklisting of the service provider, which Honorable Bryant raised, we have referred this matter to our supply chain. In terms of PAJA, we have to take into consideration the Audi Alstom rule, which is to give the service provider an opportunity to respond to our allegations of service, poor performance. And the service provider has come back to our CFO and requested a meeting to discuss the non-performance in terms of their contract. Blacklisting has huge implications for a service provider and their businesses. So we have to ensure that we allow the service provider an opportunity to respond to our cancellation of their contract prior to them being blacklisted. I believe that those were the questions from my side, BG. Honorable Chair, if I can hand back. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We will swiftly move on to the Acting DDG of Oceans and Coast.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. And thank you, Honorable Chair and the Minister. I will start with a question from Honorable Bryant about the 1,200 jobs. In my earlier explanation when I was presenting, I did mention the fact that we as the department, we are not responsible for creating those jobs. They are mainly created by the industry. And the committee may be aware, it's a dual responsibility between oceans and coast from the oceans economy side of things. And then from the fisheries management point of view, it will be our sister branch, which is fisheries management. So at the time of reporting, we were struggling to get those figures coming into the department through all the channels of reporting. And we have since, which is what I was alluding to, been able to have some success in that side, where we are now as the department receiving those statistics or those figures from the industry. However, I would like to point out that we do have a challenge when it comes into personnel, because we only have one economist whose responsibility is then to not only to receive, but to disaggregate that kind of data that is coming in, so that we can be able to package it in a way that is better assimilated when we are reporting on the matter. So unfortunately, at this point in time, we've only received, which was after the time that we're supposed to, which is the third and fourth quarter of the last financial year. But unfortunately, it we received it, and then the economist at the moment is on maternity leave. So in terms of disaggregating that data, then it will be done in due course, and it will be made available to the committee as soon as it is done. And with regards to the question asked by Honorable Ganjo, yes, there are municipalities that are assisting with the management of marine protected areas, particularly the Nelson Mandela Metro Municipality and the City of Cape Town. And we can safely say that they are doing a good job in the sense that apart from the funds that they get from the department through the work that they do for the department in the management of marine protected areas, they are also raising their own finances to get equipment and resources that in turn are made available to other programs of the department. Particularly water quality monitoring is also benefiting from that. So I can safely say, yes, those municipalities that are working with us, the two that I've mentioned, the Nelson Mandela and the City of Cape Town, they are doing a great job in assisting the department or working together with the department in the management of marine protected areas. And then with regards to the question asked by Honorable Singh, yes, it can be a very frustrating matter not to be able to gain access, but we all know that there are those different types of MPAs and zonations. Unfortunately, when it comes into the Alwal Shoal, there has been those, I would say there has been a level of discomfort and dissatisfaction, particularly from the local fishermen. So we have been in constant contact with them, particularly the South Coast Subsistence Fisheries, which is ably led by Mr. Desmond Desai. And the last meeting that we've had with them was on the 26th of July, where they are contributing towards finding a lasting solution to the problems that they have. And those problems is the rezonation of the Green Point to Mahlongwana area, that stretch between Mahlongwana and Green Point. And the process at the moment is that we are drafting those regulations, amended regulations, responding to the issues that were raised by the communities. And then the internal processes will then be followed up until they get to the desk of the minister. And we are working with our legal services to expedite that. And the time frame that we've given ourselves to get to that point is 4 to 6 weeks, but we are working on the matter. And those are the questions that I have in front of me. And thank you, Chair, and I'll give that to the Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. We will then take the acting DDG of climate change.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. Trying to put on my camera. Thank you very much, DG. There are two main questions. The one is around the list of the monitoring station, associated location, as well as the contact details. And indeed, this information will be prepared through your guidance, DG and Honorable Minister. And we would, as a team, work on it and ensure that it is transmitted. The other question is around the ongoing support of the municipalities, particularly when one look at the tools that have been developed on the coastal vulnerability assessment index. And I just want to indicate very clearly that we as a department, we have partnerships that we support the municipalities in terms of their capacity, the assessment of risk and integration of this risk within the planning tool. It's something that is ongoing through the various partners that we are able to mobilize and work with. And similarly, on the climate change bill, in terms of the requirements, Honorable Singh, on what municipalities should be doing in developing the planning tools, largely all those tools, the risk and vulnerability assessment, the adaptation strategies at the district level and at the provincial level has been supported through the department and through the partnerships that we continue to mobilize with potential donor funders. And we, to a greater extent, moving as well towards on-ground implementation on various municipalities where we're able to secure funding for various interventions through the donor support. So we indeed are not leaving this to the municipalities themselves, but we continuously provide the needed support. And just to also point that we're working with SALGA in terms of our ongoing capacity and ensuring integration to a greater extent within the IDPs. I think those were the main pointers, DG, and thank you very much, and over to you, Beth Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to request under waste management, there is a question raised by Honorable Phillips on the issue of the storage along Mpumalanga. And I think there is about the implementation and the efficiency of the whole value chain of our waste tire management, especially around processing, which was an area that was not given focus in the past. I'm going to request the head of Waste Bureau to address that question from Honorable Phillips. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. The point raised by Honorable Phillips, we acknowledge, yes, the waste tire depot at Belfast has a huge number of tires. And just like DG says, there has not been previously the prioritization of processing of waste tires, which includes recycling, as you raised it, Honorable Phillips. But we have since changed the focus because we are acknowledging that we are storing tires all over the country. And now we are not necessarily processing them. Even through the Section 29 waste tire plan that we are finalizing, we are prioritizing the processing of waste tires. The priority initially was to divert them from going to landfill site, which certainly we have achieved. But now we need to move towards processing. We're looking into issues of recovery of energy and also using the rubber crump that comes out of the different processing facilities. But it's something that we have now prioritized, even in our first quarter, for an example, performance. The processing has increased and it continues to increase. So there will be some shift from the different depots all around the country where the number of tires that are stored will start reducing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I am going to then cover just a few questions which have not been dealt with. I will start with the first question by Honorable Singh. I think one of the questions that Honorable Singh raised is around the setting of the targets. And yes, the Honorable Member is quite correct. These are targets that are set by the department, and they are informed by the medium strategic, medium-term strategic framework. So the MTSF is very critical, and they then need to link up with the five-year strategy in terms of the outcomes that we would want to achieve as a department, and then we then look into the yearly or annual APPs. Obviously, I think what then becomes quite critical is to ensure that the baseline of prior years in terms of performance, but also in terms of lessons, needs to be taken into account in coming up then with your projection of your annual targets. And that is one of the challenges that we have noted in some of these targets, where there was no baseline per se, and there wasn't sufficient work done, groundwork, to inform the target as expected. And I think it's a lesson that we obviously are taking forward in the future APPs to ensure that there's proper baselines in as far as our target setting is concerned. The other question, I think it was raised on the aquaculture bill by Member Bryant. I think, yes, the aquaculture bill is still in process. There were certain concerns raised by industry. After initial consultation, we had to take it back as a department for further public comments. Those public comments have been received. They are currently being processed internally. And once that is done, it will then have to follow approval processes within the department. And beyond that, it goes through the cabinet processes, of which if once cabinet has considered the bill and approved that bill, then it will go into a parliament for parliament's consideration. But yes, I think it has taken longer than what it should. We do acknowledge it's a process that started some time back. However, I think there were certain serious concerns that were being raised by industry around the bill. The other one, which I thought I also need to just clarify, raised by Member Bryant, is the matter around EP, Environmental Program Branch, which performance is at 33% and yet spending is at 71%. What I wanted to clarify is that some of the outputs or the resources that are under EP are for infrastructure delivery in terms of environmental programs, which is implemented through our entities, Sun Parks and also Isimangaliso. So it's not all the resources that EP utilizes in their internal program. They also need to be supporting the various entities in delivering their program, both mainly in infrastructure, but also in other expanded public works program, which then those targets and key deliverables, KPIs, are accounted for in the APPs of those entities. I think I had already indicated, and Minister had emphasized that the 80% is a non-negotiable. We had utilized the 75%, but the aim and the communication in the department, it is 80% as Minister has announced. Chairperson, I think, and I'm hoping we have covered, if there are certain other areas which we have left out, we've taken note of the concerns that the members have highlighted, and we are definitely going to be looking into them to ensure that we improve on the delivery of the department and the performance generally to make the impact that is required. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. Colleagues, are there any follow-up questions? I see Honorable Bryce's hand is up. Over to you, Honorable Bryce.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm aware that we need to finish the meeting by 1 o'clock, and I know a number of members have to get into the House as well. So I'll be very brief. I just want to quickly say a big thank you to all of the officials for the answers. I don't know when last I had such a concise and comprehensive response to questions. So a big thank you for all of those responses. I've just got one final point, and it kind of tails onto what DG was just saying now, and Mr. Fikizola was saying in terms of Operation Pakisa. And it's just a question as to how one now quantifies that target of 1,200 jobs. Because as Mr. Fikizola has said, the department actually has no way of quantifying how many jobs have been created. So how does one measure that target? And is that something that's going to be taken into consideration specifically going forward, in particular, taking into consideration Operation Pakisa is supposed to be about leveraging economic opportunities from the environment? Thanks very much, Chair.
Over to you, DG.
Can I just comment on that, Chairperson? I think that Honourable Bryant is raising an important issue that really goes beyond the just our department, because I think in other sectors of the economy, we would be utilizing Stats SA as an independent institution that would be providing data on the growth of different sectors of the economy. And whatever might be the subjective issues with regard to the relevant economist at the moment. And I think, DG, we would need to look into that matter because I don't think we can be waiting months and months until somebody comes back from maternity leave. And I don't know whether this matter had been elevated to you prior to this meeting. But I would want to suggest that that we do give due consideration to Member Bryant's question in a broader context of achieving verifiable and accurate statistical information that would be developed by an independent authority. And perhaps this is one of those areas where we would also need to interface with the presidency, because I'm not sure whether this is an appropriate target for the department itself. So can we take that one back, Member Bryant? Because I think that the question you are asking is much deeper than a capacity question about the department. And can we give it some serious consideration? Because it's I think it's an important issue. Thank you.
Honorable Bryant, I hope you are comfortable with that suggested solution by the minister.
Yes, I am, Chairperson. Thank you.
Then the officials can then respond to the issues. Then that's the way to go. Then that brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you so much, Minister and team. Thank you so much, colleagues. Enjoy your day, Fedor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Thank you.